It's funny, I've become so stingy with my interviews, but I love doing it with you, mainly because I grew up with you, and it's just more intelligent and more fun.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends. Hot button issues. Best-selling author. New York Daily News columnist. Compelling. The Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, not just because he's a Boston College guy, we are joined by one of the most talented young play-by-play guys in the business. College football for ESPN, college basketball for ESPN, and he has been the longtime radio play-by-play guy for the New York Jets. And here the Jets are. Here the Jets are, Tyler. They're on a three-game winning streak. They're being pumped up by the media. And they go into Cincinnati. And who are they playing on Sunday? Oh, I know, a team that hasn't won a game. And so as my greeting to you, Mr. Wischusen, good morning. And tell us how your day went in the Queen City.
Thanks for reminding me. That's a nice jumping off point. I appreciate it.
Bobby, what the hell happened?
I honestly think what happened is what is always capable of happening with them. I mean, they're a team that really, in some very key areas, has very little depth and talent. And, you know, it bit them. I mean, you know, they can play above their heads and beat anybody, but they also are absolutely capable of losing to anybody. And you saw them lose to, quote-unquote, anybody. A month ago, they lost to the Dolphins.
Right.
Same thing. And they, you know, they really get beat by the Dolphins, and then they beat up the Raiders. So they, you know, they're paying the price for a long period of time not drafting well.
Bob, there's the two most important people in the organization at this time for all of the obsession with Adam Gase, and we'll get to him in a second. There's two guys who are more important than anybody else. One is the kid at quarterback, Sam Darnold. The other one is the new general manager, Joe Douglas, who they got from the Eagles. And there's just absolutely no way of knowing whether he is going to have the chops to get the Jets out of this. Okay. And there's a lot of stories the last couple of days that the job is maybe even bigger than he knew when he took it. How big a job is he going to encounter once his real season starts next January?
Well, I mean, to put it in perspective, I did some math not long ago just to try and illustrate to people what these two guys, you know, Gase and Douglas, were up against. I think if you go back to 2017, you know, 2018 and 2019, if you look at those drafts, everybody from those drafts, generally speaking, is still on their respective teams. You don't dump players after 2 years.
Right.
So to be fair, go back to 2017, and I backtracked it back to 2012. Like, I think if you go back further than that, that's also not fair, because you could have guys that play 10 years in the league, you know, they're 2009, 2010 draftees that are good players and are gone. So I kind of drew the line at 2012 to 2017. In that period of time, my math was correct, if I remember what I wrote down, the Jets drafted 49 players, and 41 of those 49 are no longer on their team.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Their first-round draft choice in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, and 2016. Their first-round draft choice. From all of those years, they're all gone. The last member of that group was Leonard Williams, and they traded him to the Giants.
Right.
And I thought they got a steal for him from the Giants for what his production has been and probably the amount of money he's going to want. I mean, they got a third-round pick that's basically going to become a back end of the second-round draft choice for him potentially if he signs with the Giants. So, you know, that's what you're dealing with. They have not drafted an offensive lineman in the top two rounds of the draft since 2010. They went a decade and never took one offensive lineman in the first or second round. From a general manager standpoint, that's borderline malpractice. So their last two first-round picks are Jamal Adams and Sam Darnold. They've got those guys. And Quinnen Williams, obviously, this year. That's it. So their last three first-round picks are on the team, and all three look hopefully like they're going to be good players. But, I mean, even their third-round pick from this draft, Ja'Kai Polite, was the pass rusher they drafted from Florida. He's gone. They cut him. They cut their third-round draft choice. So now they didn't make that pick, but they cut him. So that's the reconstruction process. And I've said before, I understand that a Jet fan wants to hear the word rebuild the way like a five-year-old wants to look at asparagus on his plate. Like, you don't want to hear it. It's all you've heard. It's all you heard during John Idzik. It's all you heard during Mike Maccagnan. But that doesn't change the reality of the fact that both of those guys tried the draft, tried to rebuild it, drafted terribly, and have now left this team the way that the roster is now. Well, they have no offensive linemen, not one on the team that you really think is a bedrock guy to build on going forward. And you have to reconstruct all of that as the jumping off point. So, yeah, I mean, long story long, they have a massive job in front of them. And I don't think it's something that you can do in a year. And I do think this is still a couple to three. Joe Douglas asked for a 6-year contract. He got that for a reason. I mean, he demanded that to get the job. You know, and they gave it to him because I think he was very honest with them when they met. So, guys, this is what your roster is. This is the job I have out in front of me. I'm not coming here for a 3-year deal. And then if it doesn't work in the first 2 years, you know, you bump me because I'm a lame duck guy. I mean, it is going to take legitimately 2 or 3 years of drafts to rebuild this roster. I think I should get a 6-year deal so I have the chance to see the fruits of my labor. And they gave it to him. So, obviously, he convinced them that that's the way to go.
Bob, you know, and this is a bit counterintuitive to what I think about the National Football League. I wrote a column about this a few weeks ago in the Daily News. The notion of a long rebuild, they just don't usually happen in the National Football. You can do it in baseball, and you can do it in basketball in some cases. But I went back and looked at all the Super Bowl winning teams other than the Patriots in this generation. And none of them were bad for five or 10 years. Most of them, on average, they had 2 really bad years. But the long rebuilds are extremely unusual. Now, the San Francisco 49ers could go against that this year because they're good enough to win the Super Bowl. They've had a long rebuild in San Francisco. But long rebuilds sort of have to become shorter, long rebuilds. And I understand why Douglas wanted a 6-year contract. Yeah, we'd all like those, okay? But the fact is, long rebuilds are extremely rare in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a team that wins the Super Bowl, there are examples of teams that have gone through.
Yes, no. I'm talking about the object is to win the Lombardi Trophy.
Right. Now, I mean, the Raiders are in the middle of it, and it looks like they've taken a step this year off of what they were last. As inconsistent as they have been this year, they're better than they were last year. And everybody scoffed at them for getting rid of Mac and making the moves that they made. And yet now look at, you know, kind of what – I mean, it seems as if they are at least building a foundation. The Rams, I think, are kind of in that category as well. They built their roster. McVay came in. They threw some skill guys at it and all of a sudden turned into a different level team last year. And the 49ers are probably the best test case scenario that there is. But you can't win in this league unless you have an offensive line and unless you have at least a defensive line that can help control the line. To me, it's funny. We are so caught up in fantasy football, PPR, you know, what run it? Christian McCaffrey's the best player in the known universe because he catches 50 balls a year, because we watch statistics. That's all we look at. And we look at the quarterbacks and the skill guys. It's still a line of scrimmage game. It's still, can team A block team B? And if you can't, then good luck calling plays.
Right.
And they're going to have to flip their offensive line, the Jets are, to give the quarterback and to give the play caller a chance, because right now he doesn't have a chance.
We're talking to Bob Wischewski, and my experience in this business is no one is more in touch with National Football League teams than their radio play-by-play guy, and Wischewski certainly falls into that category. Bobby, you look at what has happened to the Jets since they were in back-to-back AFC championship games. Mike Tannenbaum has been the general manager. John Idzik has been the general manager. Mike Maccagnan has been the general manager. And now Joe Douglas is the general manager. Rex Ryan was the coach, you know, on and on and on. In so many ways, I knew I was being mean a couple weeks ago when I said that the Jets are the Knicks, but the Jets have turned into the Knicks. And once you're in that negative spiral, it's extremely difficult to get out of it. And I understand what you're saying about, you know, that Douglas is just now rolling up his sleeves. But what is this going to do to the development of a kid I think is going to be a star in the league, and that's Darnold?
Well, yeah, and I guess the reason that I would say the Jets are not the Knicks, when they went out with their free agent money and actually offered it to the
people
superstar players that were on the market in their respective sport, the superstar players took their money and came.
Yes.
And C.J. Mosley and Le'Veon Bell could have gotten contracts with other teams, and they came to the Jets because I do think that they believe, primarily because of Darnold, that there is a future there that has some direction. I mean, they've got to build around. It really does look like for the first time, and I mean, I've told people over and over again that I'm the worst possible person to talk to as a Jets fan because I'm the exact wrong age to be a Jet fan. I'm 48 years old. So I have a bald spot, and I don't remember Joe Namath. Like, that's a bad combination. Joe Namath was a Ram when I first became conscious of football. I was 7 years old. So I've never seen a franchise quarterback. I really believe until
they had one for 1 year. You know who the most successful quarterback they've had since Joe Namath is, Bob?
Vinny
Testaverde.
Yeah, Vinny for 1 year.
Yep.
And I guess you could make an argument. Kenny O'Brien and Chad both had their cups of coffee. Chad could never stay on the field. And Kenny O'Brien was always the second or third best quarterback in his own division because the other two guys in his division were going to go to the Hall of Fame.
And had the nightmare loss. I was at Cleveland that day. That was a nightmare loss. And it was one of those forks in the road for the Jets. But let's get back to Darnold for a second because, yes, I completely agree with you. He's the guy they have been looking for 50 years. 50 years.
Correct. Yeah, he's everything the face of your organization ought to be. And he was raised by a blue collar mom, and his dad is a plumber. His mom is a gym teacher. Like, they were as grounded and down to earth. You want to talk about a kid? There's no airs about him, no entitlement. He is all about hard work and the team. He just wants to be a quarterback. He's everything that you want that guy to be, and he's a baby. All at the same time. He's 22 years old. He was not of legal drinking age when they drafted him. So, like, he has, I would think, a lot of good years out in front of him. Now you have to do what it took the Colts too long to do. I mean, they just didn't build a brick wall in front of Andrew Luck until he was too beat up. He couldn't do it anymore. You have to build a brick wall in front of this kid and let him go be the player that I think he can be. And Joe Douglas is an offensive lineman. I mean, he went to Richmond. That's what he was. He was an O-lineman there. So no one has more of an appreciation for how important that position is than he does. And, the one guarantee that I can make to every Jet fan is that if you think that your team should spend high draft capital on offensive linemen, you're not going to be disappointed because this guy will spend high draft capital on offensive linemen, something that wasn't done for the better part of 10 years.
All right, we have a situation, and Bob, you have been around the metropolitan area long enough to know that one of the most complicated situations for a coach or manager is when they are working for a man who did not hire them, okay? That is Adam Gase's situation. That was Mickey Callaway's situation with the New York Mets. We can go through the list of all the teams that have tried this, and it hardly ever works. Can this partnership between Douglas and Adam Gase work?
This is a unique partnership because although you're technically right, Joe Douglas didn't hire Adam Gase, Adam Gase hired Joe Douglas or came as close as he could.
Yeah, you're right. It's an odd situation.
Like, these guys go back to basically being coaching interns and a personnel intern together. I mean, their careers track back to their infancy, and they've been tight all the way to this point. So it was seen as a sign of enormous strength inside the building from Adam's standpoint that Joe got hired because, I mean, I think this is the number one guy that he would have recommended to Christopher Johnson.
We're talking to Bob Wischusen, and Bob, I want to do just a little quick backtrack with the Jets because you have been fortunate enough to work with some exceptional people in that booth, and one of them is Marty Lyons, who was one of my favorite guys as a player, and he is completely charming as your analyst. But the other one was David Jennings.
Yeah, Dave was the best. He was He was a kind and really encouraging guy. When I worked with him, and I was never able to work a full season with him.
Right.
When I got the job as a full-time guy, Marty was my partner, and Dave had gone over to the Giants. But I spent the better part of 4 years as, like, the backup guy.
Right.
So even more in my infancy as, you know, a play-by-play guy, I'm 26, 27 years old, and I'm being given a chance to call an NFL game. So your kind of eyes are already as big as saucers, and you really, without realizing it at the time, but looking back on it, you understand how important it was to have just a genuinely nice person next to you that wanted to do everything he could do to make you comfortable, to put you in a good spot, to take his analysis in a way that he could give you something to talk about, something that you could ask back to him, and that was Dave. I mean, Dave was genuinely interested in the person next to him succeeding. And a lot of guys wouldn't necessarily be that way. You know, some guys might be in it a long time, and all of a sudden, you know, some kid gets thrown in there next to him. He might kind of be like, man, it's New York City. Like, why am I next to this kid? How come you're not giving me a pro that's done this before?
Right.
And Dave looked at it the other way. He was like, all right, let's see, well, you know, let's see what he can do. And let's, you know, let's assume that he has a chance to do this, and let's be pros together. And that's the way he was. He was a really, really nice person.
And now the guy you're working with, Robert, his enthusiasm level never wanes, no matter how bad the team you're looking at is.
Yeah, if you ever saw him play or were lucky enough to sit somewhere.
Oh, I did. I saw him in his prime. Yeah.
Yeah, when they came, like when they would come off the field, I remember being a kid. And I loved saying that to him. I grew up watching you play. Nothing gives me more pleasure than to say that to Marty. But I remember being like 13, 14 years old, getting some seats for some games through my dad's company, you know, three or four rows behind the bench. You know, once a year he'd get past these tickets. And the Jets would come off the field. And I remember the first time I was sitting right on the bench being like, God, that guy's insane. Who is that? You know? And it was Marty.
Yeah.
Marty had like the Gallagher hair. Like he'd take his helmet off and it would freaking fly in all different kinds of directions. You're like frothing at the mouth, screaming at people. But he was that leader. And now he has taken that and not only become a leader for us with our radio crew, but look at the foundation he's built.
Yep.
I mean, he's got like a Make-A-Wish foundation of his own, the Marty Lyons Foundation. He's got not only a huge chapter in New York, but he's got a chapter down in Georgia, one in Tampa, St. Pete, where he grew up, one, I think, in Charleston or Charlotte. So, I mean, he probably in a year takes 4,000 or 5,000 families who have either terminally ill children or children that are battling through a debilitating disease or just, you know, going through really horrible times. And he, you know, basically no questions asked, sends them to Disney World, sends them to California, you know, retrofits their house for their wheelchair or whatever. I mean, so that same, like, you know, wild guy, crazy man leader that you saw on the football field, now he channels all of that into helping people. So he's a very unique person. I mean, there's a reason I actually did his Ring of Honor speech. When they inducted him.
Right.
And one of the lines that I said was something to the effect of, you know, Marty's never going to be in Canton. You know, he's never going to have a bronze bust in the actual Hall of Fame, which might lead someone to wonder, well, why are the Jets putting him in their Ring of Honor if he wasn't the great player that's going to go to the Hall of Fame? And the reason is, if you spent any time around the Jets, if you're any part of the Jets family, even a Jets fan, you know what Marty means to the organization.
Oh, yeah.
To the community, to the city. He's a first ballot Ring of Honor guy.
Yeah.
Because of that, because it's not just about being a player for him. It's about, you know, about the impact he's had on so many people.
And he's seen so much with the Jets, good and more bad, since he was a player. And
well, we actually did. I think the two of us, I think, are now the two longest tenured people in the building, because if you go back to when he was a player, he's been, I think he's 42 years in now, going back to his rookie training camp. And next year, I think, is my 25th Jets training, or 26th, one or the other. But he predates me by about 15 years, obviously, from when he was drafted to when I started covering the team. But we're it. I mean, there's nobody in the building now that has seen as much of the Jets over the years as we have.
The terrific play-by-play broadcaster for ESPN's college football coverage and on the radio for the New York Jets, Bob Wischusen, is our guest on the Mike Lubega podcast. More of our conversation right after this from Circle. Remember the mischief we got into when we were young and curious? Innocent stuff compared to today, when your kids' curiosity could get them into some pretty scary corners of the internet. Make sure they stay safe with Circle, the award-winning way to manage your family's online time inside and outside your home. Just plug Circle Home Plus into your router, download the app, and you can keep track across every connected device. Laptops, phones, tablets, smart TVs, even video game consoles. All from one place. With Circle, you can filter what content is allowed, set limits for screen time, monitor history and usage, and even reward kids for good behavior. And right now, our listeners get a limited time offer of $30 off a Circle Home Plus when you visit meetcircle.com/Lupica and enter Lupica at checkout. Get $30 off when you visit meetcircle.com/Lupica and enter Lupica at checkout. That's meetcircle.com/Lupica and enter Lupica to save $30. We're talking to Bob Wischusen on the Mike Lubega podcast, and I'm a little partial to him because he's a BC guy, but I honestly believe that he is actually, he just said he's 48. He could still do anything in his play-by-play career. Bobby, did you go to BC because you saw it as, you know, Syracuse has the reputation. I mean, I came as a writer and Ryan had been there and Leslie Visser and I were there together and Joe Tessitore and Shambi and you guys came later. But, you know, that radio, WZBC, I go back to when my roommate was the basketball play-by-play guy there with Billy Evans back when I was in school, Lenny DeLuca. And so did you see BC as an avenue to this kind of career?
No, I didn't. I mean, no. I knew what I wanted to do. I didn't 100% know exactly how to go about doing it. I just knew it was a really good school. I didn't really even know a ton about the radio. I knew there was a radio station.
Yeah.
And the second day that I was there, I mean, I checked in and dumped all my stuff in my room and went to the freshman barbecue. And the next morning, I went to the radio station. And if you know the radio station at BC is like this kind of, you know, it's where REM was born. It's like this underground kind of alternative punk station. So, you know, you walk in and there's a guy sitting behind the desk with like 50 piercings and blue and pink hair, and you say to him, hey, do you guys do sports here? Yeah. And that guy's like, yeah, there are some guys that do sports. And I'm like, great, where are they? You know, and so, and that was it. And they do a talk show, and we broadcast the student games. But the thing that going to BC helped me with was internships. You know, that to me is the leg up that you have over maybe a kid that's at Syracuse.
Right.
If you're at Syracuse, you're getting unbelievable classroom training, the Newhouse School. I mean, it's hands-on. You've got pros teaching pros. At BC, there was none of that. I mean, the communications major there was like one TV course, one radio course, one PR course, so on and so forth. But I was in Boston. So WEEI needed interns. I was an intern. WRKO is the Red Sox radio network. I interned there.
Oh, same with Bob. I ended up working nights at the Boston Globe. My track was the same in sports writing.
Exactly. You know, I was an intern at WFAN. Those internships all led me to getting my first job because I had buddies that, you know, I interned for that were probably no more than 5 or 6 years older than me who made a call on my behalf, who knew a guy down in Miami, and I got a job down there with Hank Goldberg.
Right.
So that was my track. It really had nothing to do. No one, and I'm sure you might even be the same, no one's ever asked me where I went to school. They find out later that I went to BC.
Right, that's exactly right.
Nobody ever asked me what my GPA was. They want to know, who have you worked with? Who have you worked for? What can you do? What's your experience? That's it. You could go to any school as long as you get in the kind of the grist mill of our business and get your hands on something and you're around some decision maker somewhere and work hard, then hopefully that guy thinks of you when either he has an opportunity or he knows of someone who's looking. And internships are the things that open that door.
Yeah, I did a thing for BC a few years ago at the Waldorf, and was speaking to a BC crowd of heavy hitters. And I said to them, listen, I said, I'm a Boston College man. I said, everything that's happened to me in my career has happened because I was a Boston College man. But it was after I, you know, started when I was going good that I tried to become a face and a voice of the university. And I'm so happy now that, you know, that guys like you and Shambi are, you know, have done as well as you have done, because, you know, my sons and my daughter, my daughter's now a communications journalism major at Boston College, but I didn't have any of that. I didn't have any of that. I was writing for three school papers and writing for the Boston Phoenix and working nights at the Globe. I always joke with my kids. Yeah, nobody ever has had to say to me, Mike, take that silver spoon out of your mouth before you write your next column.
No, I mean, my first job in Miami, and I've told the story many times, my first job in Miami was for $7.10 an hour. And I was told to keep that under my hat because there were guys that had been at the station that hadn't cracked $7 an hour yet, but they were living at home and I was paying rent. So they were willing to give me like the extra 20 cents an hour so I would be able to help afford my rent. I mean, this is 1993. It wasn't 1953.
Right.
And when I was there too, I remember being in the control room. I'd probably been there for about 6 or 8 weeks. And my boss walks in, and I forget exactly how he phrased the question. I don't know, you know, but the gist of what he was saying was, look, you're really like a complete idiot for coming down here and doing this. I'm just wondering if you know anybody else that's as stupid as you. And I was like, I got just the guy. His name is John Shambi. Let me dial him up. I bet he'd come down here tomorrow. And that's how we ended up both being in Miami together. And we lived together for 3 years down there because I knew of at least one other guy that was willing to say, I don't care what they're going to pay me. Like, I don't care. Just get me to a market like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, which is, you know, whatever, top 10, top 15 in the country. And let's go do this and get our foot in the door. And, you know, that's everybody. There's no mailroom to the boardroom career track, I think, for what either of us do or have done. But the one common thread among all of us is everybody, TV, radio, magazine, newspaper, whatever, if you've achieved any success, everybody has like the first job that they got where they made nothing, but they just got their foot in the door somewhere. Everybody has a story to tell like that. And for Shambi and I, it's the same story. We worked at the same radio station together in Miami, and combined, we didn't make $15 an hour.
We're joined today by New York Jets and ESPN college football play-by-play guy Bob Wischusen. More of our conversation with Bob in a minute, but first a word from our sponsor, Geico. Listen, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. We're talking to Bob Wischusen again. He's one of the most talented play-by-play guys in the business, and you are now working college football. I'm sure you've been made aware of the fact that Orlovsky is sort of a fave of mine, and I knew nothing about him, really, Bobby, before this year, and then I started watching him on GetUp, and then I started listening to him with you, right now at that company. And you don't even have to respond to this. There's no better combination than you and Orlovsky. Talk about what it is like working with Dan.
Well, I didn't think that it would be possible for me to go from Brock Heward to like a lateral move in terms of a guy that's equally as invested and dialed in and student of the game and interested in everyone's success and just a good guy as a partner, and I hit a home run. I mean, I got Dan. We were laughing the other day, the folks on our crew, about how we literally didn't miss a beat from working, you know, 5 years with Brock to now working with Dan this year.
Yeah.
I think Dan had a learning curve, being in a booth on a show that's got some resources to help him, but he's so invested.
Oh,
so dialed in.
Oh my God.
So does so much homework during the week and so prepared and just loves football. And loves talking football. And I hope that having done this for 20 years or so, and having been in a lot of film rooms with a lot of different guys, you know, my goal is to try and at least, if he's a doctorate level in football, I'd like to think I'm at least, you know, in junior high, but I occasionally know the right question to ask him to get the football out of him, because I think that's what he has to offer. He's great. He's great. It's been a lot of fun working with him this year.
All right. You have watched a lot of college football in person this year and on television. Obviously, it makes it more challenging for you doing games on Saturday most of the time to see everybody. Tell me who you think the Final Four is going to be.
Well, Clemson and Ohio State are blocks, I think, because they can't be beat in their championship games. I mean, they should steamroll through their championship games. So, to me, they're automatically in. I think if LSU even were to lose, as long as they lose close,
yep,
they'll probably be in. And if they lose, it's Georgia. If they do what I think everybody thinks they'll do, and they'll beat Georgia, then as long as Utah does what they're supposed to do, I think they'll probably get in as a conference champion. I think they're going to get a little bit more respect than Oklahoma, because I think they're going to get a little bit more respect for, you know, if they beat Oregon twice. But that last spot, there's going to be somebody griping, because you're going to have a power conference champion, most likely, that's going to be left out. You might have two of them left out if Georgia pulls off an upset. So I'm a fan of eight. I've always thought that eight was the right number with five power leagues. I think eight, you know, I hope someday they go to it. I think selfishly I would like it, because it would make more of the games that I do more compelling, especially later in the season. But if I were to pick the two teams that I've seen in person that I think are by far the most complete, I think Ohio State and Clemson are the most complete. And I think Clemson's the hardest one to really accurately judge, because they play no one. Their league, and I say this as a BC guy, ashamed of what the ACC has become, but Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, I mean, some of these teams that in the past have been national powerhouses, it's the Mountain West. It's like Boise and everybody
else. It's the AFC East with shoes.
Yes. It's the Patriots and everybody else. It's right. Just, they never get challenged. They're never not a 27-point favorite. And I know, because I had them twice this year. And they were a 27-point favorite in both of those games. And they covered. And there was no doubt they were going to cover. You know, so I still think that they're the best team in the country. I mean, I think they've got the best personnel in the country. I still think they've got the best quarterback in the country. I would take Trevor Lawrence with the first pick in the draft if I could.
And Bob,
let me back and play in college.
And a reminder that today's episode of the Mike Lubica podcast with Jets play-by-play voice Bob Wischusen is being sponsored by Kronos. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Hey, Bobby, here's the thing about Lawrence. Because they're from the ACC, and he was able to play himself through a slow start. I was talking about this the other day with Ryan. Now he looks like Trevor Lawrence again. You know, there were some bumps in the road early, but because they're always a 27-point favorite, he played his way through that.
Yeah, I mean, I called their game against Louisville. I think he threw two or three interceptions the first half. They still won by 30. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I think they're the most complete team, but you're always going to have folks that are going to doubt them, just like they've doubted them two out of the last 3 years, because they play in that league. And because everybody from the SEC is going to puff their chests out about whoever comes out of the SEC, calling them battle-tested, and then that SEC team goes and loses to Clemson, because Clemson's really, really good. But, you know, they just happen to play in such a powder-puff league right now that, You know, it's they're going to be taken for granted, I think. And you could see the committee did it. Committee dropped them to 3. All they do is win by 30, and they drop in the standings. I will pick them to win the national championship. To me, they're the Patriots. Like, until somebody beats them, I'll believe it when I see it.
All right, I got a couple more college football questions, then a couple more Jets questions, and then Wisconsin has to do a game tonight. All right. What if Baylor wins, Bob, and the only blemish on their record is one bad fourth quarter against Oklahoma and Waco?
I would think that they wouldn't. They're kind of the classic we need help team. Like, they would need Utah to lose and probably lose, like, lopsided. They need to beat Oklahoma and beat Oklahoma convincingly. They need LSU to beat Georgia and to, like, beat them up. You know, if they get some of those lopsided losses to go their way, then, yeah, I think that, you know, we do that for whatever it's worth. Our metrics people at ESPN put out that playoff predictor. Right now I would probably put, you know, Baylor in, like, that, whatever, 10 to 15% range. They have a chance.
Right.
It's a long shot. But they not only need to win their game and kind of leave no doubt that they didn't win fluky, they won their game. And they need, I think, those other results to really kind of be lopsided in their favor.
All right. Bob, what do you make of the Michigan situation and the Harbaugh situation? Because, you know, immediately after Saturday's game, here's what you heard. Okay. Well, it's just the gap between Ohio State and them, except they were down 28-0 to Wisconsin at the half this year.
Yep.
And I was saying this to Mitch Albom, who is, you know, in the right there for Michigan football. You look at Ohio State, Bob, in the last few years, if you count Joe Burrow, and you have to count him because he was on campus, they've had 4 quarterbacks at Ohio State better than anybody Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback whisperer, has had. And what have they lost? 15 out of 16 games, obviously not all Harbaugh, with Ohio State. Bob, they got rung up for 118 points the last 2 Michigan-Ohio State games. And what I'm asking you is, when does that gap get closed?
What I said to someone, because I got a bunch of buddies that are Michigan fans. Like, there's like a gaggle of Michigan guys where I play golf, and I see them all the time, and I play with some of them. And I was talking to one of them the other day about this, and he was like, yeah, but do you remember what – and this is what I've heard from the, you know, kind of those that are always going to err on the side of being – you know, whoever's coaching Michigan behind the coach. And the theory was, well, what was it like under Brady Hoke? Are you forgetting what it was like under Rich Rod? Like, I mean, he's winning 9 games a year. Last year we played in the Peach Bowl. And I was like, whoa. So that is revisionist history. That was not the pitch that we were given when Harbaugh came in and gave that press conference. The pitch that we were given when Harbaugh came in and gave that press conference was, here we come, Ohio State. Here we come, Michigan State. Here we come, Penn State. We're winning Big Ten championships. We're going to the college football playoff. We're going back to Rose Bowls. Like, he hasn't won any of those. He hasn't gotten to any of those. And I'm wondering if, you know, if you want to now just say it's okay that you go 9-2 and play in a nice New Year's Day game. I mean, as BC guys, we would kill for that. I'd love to go 9-2 and play in the Citrus Bowl against somebody from the SEC. That'd be fun. That's not Michigan. That's not the bill of goods that we were sold when Harbaugh got hired. So do you just get to ad infinitum, keep losing to Ohio State, but you don't pay with your job just because you're the quote-unquote Michigan man who was supposed to come in and right the ship and do the opposite? So, yeah, I mean, I asked that question to Dan. We were doing a game this past week, and we kept seeing that score come across. And I said to him, I said, you're a talk show host Monday through Wednesday with Greeny on Get Up.
Right.
So when this topic gets thrown at you, I'm the talk show host, and I ask you the question. If Jim Harbaugh's job is not in jeopardy after 5 straight losses to Ohio State, when will it be in jeopardy, or why isn't it in jeopardy? And he was like, if you ask me, it ought to be in jeopardy. I mean, he was kind of in our camp. Like, when is enough enough, and when are you going to make good on some of, the promises that Michigan fans were given the day he was hired? And that was not to just improve on Brady Hoke being, you know, bowl eligible. It was to go and beat your rivals. And they never beat any of them.
Bob, I said this to Mitch. Mitch thinks he's staying, okay? I said the first time somebody comes after him with a pro job, he's going to take it. That's what I believe.
Could very well be.
That's what I think. All right, a couple more questions about the Jets, and then you got to save your voice. All right. Give Jets fans some hope apart from Darnold, for the immediate future. Give them some reason to believe that they might be able to move up to, say, 8-8 next year.
I would say probably three things. A, you've got an offensive lineman for a general manager who is going to go out and use the draft to build an offensive line in front of the quarterback. B, once they work their cap the way I think they will this offseason, they're probably going to be in the 80s again in terms of cap room. So whatever you're not able to address via the draft on the offensive line, like, they should be able to go out and get at least two starters on the offensive line on the free agent market as well. And C, next year, they can't be more banged up than they've been this year. They can't be more hurt. They never got their tight end, who was supposed to be like the number one skill guy outside of Le'Veon Bell for Sam Darnold this year. They never got him on the field. They were down to corners that you'd be surprised if they played in the fourth game of the preseason, starting the last month. You know, their best defensive player, who missed five games in his career coming into this season, C.J. Mosley, basically missed the entire year. So you got to think he'll be back, and hopefully he'll be healthy next year. So if they're healthy, they've got cap room, and they're successful in the draft and putting some offensive linemen in front of Sam Darnold, they should be much better next year. I mean, you know, but those things all have to happen. And this has to be finally the general manager that drafts well, because the previous two guys didn't. And that's why they find themselves in the mess that they're in.
Play-by-play broadcaster Bob Wischusen is our guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. More with Mr. Wischusen in a moment. But first, this from our sponsor, Geico. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. The company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. Geico didn't come along just when they started doing these awesome television commercials. And anytime you need help, you speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of here. What do you think of Gase?
I like him, but I don't know yet. Because yeah. I feel like he's bringing a knife to a gunfight. And I guess what I think is tough about being in New York, and I think he really is the guy that shuts it all out. Like, I don't think he reads. I don't think he listens. So I don't think he knows how badly he's getting bludgeoned. But the one thing that's tough in New York is every time they win, it's because the offensive line kind of came together. Sam Darnold played well. The defense, you know, Greg Williams is magical potion with all of these next man up guys. And then the minute they lose, it's all Gase's fault. He called a terrible game. He's an awful head coach. You know, I just don't believe that. So I think he should have the right. I took a lot of heat because I called a bunch of Jet fans like the lunatic fringe, because to me, I think you are the lunatic fringe. If you want to fire a coach halfway through his first season, when his quarterback had mono for the four of the first five games of the year. So I think he deserves to have an off season. Right. I think he deserves to have he and his general manager go through a draft and actually get some players in here that he helps to pick. He hasn't had that. So how good of a coach ultimately will he be? I don't know. But to say right now that he's, you know, as bad as any coach they've ever had, or, you know, they have no chance with him, is totally unfair. I mean, he has not been given anything but a losing hand with injuries and with kind of an empty roster since he walked through the door.
Yeah, I wrote a comment the other day about the Jets losing Belichick was the worst day that any New York team ever had, okay?
Yeah, but we know.
And a friend of mine who's a big Jets fan sent me an email, and he said, listen, here's the thing on Gase. He said, do I know Gase is going to be good? No. He said, but do I know that he's a flop? No. And he said, look back at 20 years. People hated the way Belichick had lost, but they weren't crazy that they had lost Belichick at the time. And then when he had a bad year out of the box with the Patriots, and Al Groh had the Jets going good until they collapsed at the end, the Jets fans were feeling pretty good. And the point he was making is we just don't have enough of a sample size on Adam Gase.
And by the way, everyone needs at some point during their career a couple of things to break their way. And, like, it doesn't hurt Bill Belichick, and I don't think it diminishes his legacy too much, to admit that you're not taking a top 10 all-time quarterback with the 199th pick in the draft because you knew that, A, he was going to be a top 10 quarterback, and, B, no one was going to touch him until the sixth round. I mean, they had no idea what Tom Brady was, and he fell into having one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the sport. God bless him. But you need at least a little bit of that to go your way as well. So, you know, maybe some of that luck will eventually come to the Jets. I don't know. It's been 50 years since it has.
Hey, man, thank you for doing this today. Wishusen's working a basketball game tonight, Syracuse and Iowa, that probably will get the biggest rating in the history of college basketball for ESPN. Yeah, Who are you working with tonight?
When you take a break from Louisville and Michigan and come check out our game.
Who are you working with tonight?
John Crispin.
All right. Well, listen, pal, thank you for doing this. You know, not enough good things can happen to you. And I was sorry that I had to play the card. Just tell before you go what chit I called in with you, Bob Wischusen, to get you to do this today.
Yeah. It was an exaggerated chit, by the way.
No, it was not.
Yes, it was.
No. You listen to me, young man.
All right.
We're playing.
I'll tell the story, and then you tell me if I told it wrong.
Okay.
We're playing golf in front of an audience at the IMS Teed Off Challenge back in the day. And yep. Par 3. I don't know how many people were out there.
A lot.
If memory serves, it was about 15,000, although it was probably about 50.
Yeah.
But I somehow, like, shanked a 7-iron under the front of the green and hit a putt up to, I think, about 18 inches. And you told me to pick it up. And I kind of backhanded it, missed it, and the crowd gasped. And I pointed over to you, and you put your hand up and told everybody, no, that was good. I gave it to him. And, you know, now all of a sudden when I had to do this podcast, somehow you gave me an 8-footer for the win. And, I thought that was a little bit of an exaggeration.
You know, okay, so here's what actually happened. Sims is my partner, okay? And he thinks every game is the NFC East, okay? And so, Wischusen's on the other team. And the putt wasn't 18 inches. It was about a 3-footer downhill. And there was no way on a day for charity that I was going to make anybody putt that. Okay. And as soon as I gave it to you, you didn't hear Sim say to me, "What the hell are you doing?" And I said, I've been there. I'm not making him putt that ball. But I did what I did do is immediately tell the crowd that the putt was good.
Well, I don't know if I ever told you this story, but quick 30-second story. The next day, I have to go work at FAN. I jump in the shower. I got the radio on. While I'm in the shower, I click the radio on, and Imus is talking to Jim Nance about our match.
Who, by the way, was in a complete – who could not get the club back that day. He was in a complete panic.
I was on the range with him. He looked like a scholarship player at the University of Houston. And then we went on the golf course, and he struggled. But he's on the phone with Imus.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I realize, wait, that's Jim Nance's voice. Well, wait a second. They're talking about my gimme. Because Imus says something to him like, "I didn't know you could pick your ball up in golf." And Imus says, Nance says, "Well, you're not supposed to be able to do that, Imus. I mean, there's actually somebody here that I'd like to run that past." And he hands the phone over, and all of a sudden, George Bush Sr.
yes.
is talking to Imus about the fact that you gave me my putt.
Yeah.
So I'm in the shower getting ready to go in to do my update shift on FAN, listening to George Bush Sr. on Imus' show talking about the fact that you never should have given me my putt.
Bobby, thank you for doing this. It is so great to catch up with you. Have a good game tonight. Have a good rest of the season. Again, I just love what's happened to your career, pal.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Bob Wischusen on the Mike Lubica podcast. He's just a great storyteller and a great talent. Go to Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, Apple Podcast. Leave us a rating. Leave us a comment. You know, I'm lucky enough to know people like this, and that's why it's the fun of doing this podcast. And I'll talk to you in a few days, everybody.
The Mike Lubica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.